Live from Burbank, California, where robots have sex with men, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, he's sinking below 70 bucks a barrel. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, need machines, all of yous. Welcome aboard. Jim, are you all right?
Are you okay? Coming unhinged, really.
I walk in, I can't tell the difference. I don't know whether you're in a good place or a bad place or something stuck in your craw or it was something I did or it was just the way you are. What? I don't know.
All of the above.
Okay, so then I'm getting to know you.
Yeah, man,
that's good. So it's something I can depend on, that when I walk in, you're always going to make me a little uncomfortable, but it might not have anything to do with me. It's all on you.
I was just sitting there looking at the web trying to, you know, figure out our next guest. Learn more about our guest.
Yeah.
And things like that. And you walk in and go, what happened? What'd I do? Something wrong?
That's how I say hi. I think you should know that about me, that when I walk in and go, problem, that's a greeting. It's not a real question. It's, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. I should get used to that by now.
Look,
it's happened so many times.
I know. It doesn't have to happen. I'm burying the hatchet. There's no hatchet to bury. But I think that you and I, it's Friday, we can relax, we can enjoy each other's company, we have music
coming over to your place tonight.
Whoa, back up. What do you mean you're coming to my place tonight?
Yeah, man, I'm celebrating at your place tonight.
All right, I'll meet you there. Just wait for me out in front. Michelle Green is going to come and sing pretty songs for us in a little while. What? Bill Kolar, why are you yelling with the hands? Get in my head.
No singing.
Really, no singing. Okay, all right. Well, that's awkward. But she does. She has several records out, and we're going to talk about those records. And did she bring a CD that maybe we can throw in the thing and play when she comes on? Huh? Yeah?
Yes.
Oh, well, then there'll be music. The idea was Spanish music, a little bit of Spanish music for Cinco de Mayo. Today is Cinco de Mayo.
I can sing Besame Mucho.
Do it. Hit it, baby. Let's do it.
Besame Mucho.
That was awesome. Is that all you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, all right. That's not okay. I didn't know what Cinco de Mayo was, and I was hoping that we can get a little history. And I realized that literally for a week and a half now, Jim, I'm like, what the hell is it? Is somebody going to tell me what it is? As if the internet didn't exist. As if there weren't any such things as books or encyclopedias. I was concerned that I might go through life not knowing what the Cinco de Mayo is. And all I had to do was go to Wikipedia and look it up. And there it was. It's a day of remembrance of the Batalla de Puebla, the Battle of Puebla, in which a very sort of poorly equipped but very passionate Mexican army, or what was left of them, there's less than 4,000 troops, defeated the French forces, who were at more than 5,000 troops, and they were well equipped and ready to go. And apparently this was, if I can just give this to you, I'm not going to pretend like I'm doing it off the top of my head, all right? I'm going to go ahead and read it to you, because I think a lot of people should know this, given that immigration is a big issue. The Mexicans live among us as our brothers, and this is a relatively important day to them. With Mexico bankrupt, the government asked for a moratorium, which all foreign debt payments would be suspended for a brief 2 years period to resume payments on October 31st, 1861. Yeah, it's a long time ago. The representatives of Queen Isabella II of Spain, Queen Victoria of Great Britain, and Emperor Napoleon III of France refused the request and signed the Convention of London, by which the three nations agreed jointly to occupy Mexico in order to force the Mexican government to pay its foreign debt. All right, so this caused some trouble. And apparently there was a conservative faction, a liberal faction in Mexico at the time. There was a group of Mexicans that wanted to be more European, wanted the French to occupy them, wanted the Spanish there, wanted the English there. They wanted to be an aristocracy.
Yeah.
And there was a peasant class or an indigenous class that was more liberal and wanted the country for themselves, did not want this intrusion. And it all kind of, I think, fulminated is the word. See, the battle, what happened was, is the Spanish and the English split, the French hung out, and the battle between the French and the Mexican armies occurred on May 5th. What year is that? Wow. Come on, there's got to be a year here. This is the problem with flying by the seat of your pants reading something and you didn't write. Even if I wrote it, it probably wouldn't have the date. But it happened around the time that I just said. I'm going to tell you the time. Around the 1860s, in that area.
I think that
it's a crappy thing with me. You're not supposed to be vague with history. This is known stuff.
It lasted a long time, though. It wasn't until 1867, after the Civil War, when the U.S. could give Mexico weapons to fight against the Europeans, that they really took the upper hand.
Do you expect me just to play along like that just came off the top of your head, or do you want me to reveal the fact that you tapped on and got online and did a little research?
I have Andy Dick on Wikipedia right here.
All right. Well, that was very impressive that you actually did a little work. That's what you were doing right when I walked in and said problem.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm just cramming for the show.
No, man. I was.
Meanwhile, happy. Michelle Green is like, what am I getting into? Does anyone even listen to this? When is this on? Is this on a radio station? Who the hell set me up with this? Maybe I should rethink my publicity people. Anyways, look, here's the deal. The battle between the French and Mexican armies occurred on this day. In that time period that you're talking about, went on for a while, apparently. And I'm not trying to trivialize this. 4,500 men encountered a battle. A bunch of French were much more well-equipped. They won, okay? Yeah. And it's Mexican Independence Day. How's that?
Yeah.
Man, I feel like I massacred that. I underlined, I highlighted, I had big plans to make it understandable. And what did I do? I just slaughtered it. And made a mess of it. Look, you can just look it up for yourself. Everyone's online, right? If you're not and you're in your car, look it up later. But we're going to have some nice music, and Michelle Green's going to chat with us. But more importantly, you're still coming in, aren't you? Okay. All right, more importantly, this just happened today, and this is beautiful, because I feel like I'm not going to gloat. I'm not going to jump up and down. But I think that Porter Goss, the CIA director, resigning out of nowhere is a tremendous indication that he is in a crap load of trouble. They're trying to play it like Bush had decided this and that John Negroponte, the national intelligence director, had decided it long before. But I think it has something to do with this scandal. I think it has something to do with this guy, with the Cunningham scandal, with the congressional scandal, like I was talking about yesterday. This guy, Brent Wilkes, this military contractor who was paying for all these poker prostitute parties for Duke Cunningham and certain members of Congress. Mm-hmm. There's been a CIA official implicated in this. That's Executive Director Kyle Dusty Fogo. He's the agency's third-ranking official. And there's been suggestions that someone else high-ranking in the CIA was also attending these parties and maybe partaking in this debauchery. It's not the debauchery I mind. It's the hiding the debauchery and the debauchery at the behest of military contractors to facilitate legislation. But there is some indication that Porter Goss may be involved in this. So I'd like to think, I don't know how you want to think about it, but I personally would like to think that he's resigning because he's dirty and this administration cannot afford any more of that type of press, given that everybody involved with the place stinks. You know, Andrew Carter's out, and I don't know if he was dirty, but he was part of the White House Iraq group. Rove is on the verge of being indicted. Scooter Libby, the Cheney's chief of staff, is done. Cheney's dirty. They all leaked the name of Valerie Plame and compromised mm-hmm. national security in terms of Iranian weapons being distributed throughout the world. So I just don't think that they could afford that Porter Goss, who was basically a puppet at this point anyways, because the CIA does not even have the juice that it used to. Hence, you have people like Ray McGovern, who stands up to Donald Rumsfeld yesterday. This is an ex-CIA information analyst for 35 years, passes the audition, takes it to Rumsfeld at a speaking event, and then hours later is on CNN, he's on Paul Azan, he's on Anderson Cooper, he's making the rounds, and you know what? He's got credibility, and he's speaking the truth, and you rarely see that point of view that he's disseminating on television without somebody debating it. I got to wrap this up here for now because we want to have Michelle Green in here to chat. We're going to talk about this throughout. We've got John Amato on in a little while from Crooks and Liars. I've got the short order news coming up. I should do it now, eh? Why not do it now? A lot happened in the news today, and we want to make sure you're up to speed and informed so you don't get caught off guard. So here's tonight's edition of the Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. A new AP poll suggests angry conservatives are helping to drive President Bush's approval levels to new lows. Many Democrats are concerned that since hating Bush has gone mainstream, the hipper Democratic base will start supporting him, ironically. Protesters repeatedly interrupted Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld during a speech yesterday, including former CIA analyst Ray McGovern. Rumsfeld said he didn't lie to get us into the war. He simply told the truth as he wanted it to be without regard to the reality of the situation. If you want to call that lying, be a dick about it. Well, two pages there. Microsoft Corporation Chairman Bill Gates said this week that he wishes he wasn't the world's richest man. Gates told an audience in Seattle that there's nothing good that comes out of that. Later, to cheer himself up, he bought and sold Seattle. That's the Mark Maron Show Short Order News, Edition 1, my friends. We're going to talk about that Ipsos poll. This is, you don't know, you know what's happening, Jim? It's going down. They are going down. It is unbelievable. Even their own people think they stink. And I got the numbers to prove it. In a minute, we'll have Michelle Green in here. Stay with us. It's the Mark Maron Show is what it is.
Now he's covered with harmful bacteria. Mark Maron.
It's so weird when you say the funny thing over the beautiful music.
I know, but
it changes the effect of the whole thing.
It does.
That sound you hear is Michelle Green singing. It is Cinco de Mayo, and I really wanted to have someone on who could maybe talk about the holiday a little bit, which I already did. But she's going to talk about it some more, maybe clear it up, because she can say the names properly. I was gonna go to a Mexican restaurant and get a mariachi van, but I wasn't that hungry for Mexican food, so that didn't happen either. But I'm happy that Michelle Green's here. You may remember her as Abby Perkins on L.A. Law. What you may not know about her is that she is an accomplished singer and songwriter, and she is here with us. Welcome to the show, Michelle Green.
Thank you.
Now, you are you have three records out. In Spanish.
Two. I have two.
Two
My
records.
Second one is coming out, yeah.
And I would not have known that you were Latina.
Yeah, no, I'm half Mexican, Nicaraguan. Yeah. My mother is Mexican and Nicaraguan.
So you grew up with it?
Well, my dad actually passed away when I was an infant, so I grew up with a completely Latin household with my grandmother, my aunts, and my cousins.
And where was your dad from?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma. Well, okay. Yeah. Well, that saved you Oklahoma.
Yeah. So it's but I grew up here in L.A., like in a totally Latin, Latin social, like family social environment. So people are always amazed when they meet my mother and she's like this little tiny Mexican lady, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and they hear me speaking Spanish and they always say to me, did you study Spanish in high school? And
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, no, I learned it at home.
That's so great to have that in the house. I'm just a language deficient. I can't do it. I can't apply myself. I don't even speak English correctly. So what's your understanding of this holiday? You say it's not that big a deal in Mexico?
In Mexico, Cinco de Mayo is not. They make a really big deal about it here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a minor holiday in Mexico because, you know, there are lots of different independence holidays in Mexico because it's been occupied by so many different countries.
Sure.
September 16th is the really big Independence Day because that's independence from the Spaniards. And that, of course, was, you know, the dominant culture that, you know,
yeah.
formed Mexico and with the Indians and the mestizos and whatnot. But the Battle of Puebla on Cinco de Mayo is about the French.
Right.
And that's when the French had installed this sort of government and they were routed by a much smaller Mexican army of peasants
right.
and whatnot. So, but in Mexico, it's not as big a deal as it is here.
Well,
so.
we're slowly moving towards a large independence, Mexican Independence Day here in this country, I think, if legislation ever happens. Do you, so you have a song about the immigration issue and you have some feelings about it as well?
Yeah, we have a couple songs on this upcoming CD. We have a couple songs. We do a cover of a Bruce Springsteen song, Across the Border.
Oh, yeah.
We did. We added a Spanish verse, too, and then we have a song of our own, of my own, with my co-writer, called Piedra y Libertad, that's about, it means stone and freedom, and it's basically a song sort of about the Statue of Liberty and what that is supposed to represent and
uh-huh.
what it sort of no longer does because
sure.
people are, you know, it's that thing that happens when people get, you know, you're going through a hard time or a difficult time like we are in this country with this horrible war and an economy that's falling apart and a middle class that's suddenly seeing, you know, their sort of future being gutted. And what happens is what happens often, it's happened throughout history, is you say, okay, who do we blame for this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all these people standing up and saying, you know, those Latinos are taking my job.
Right,
like,
right.
Man, you don't want that job. You
right.
know you're not going to take that job.
It's, right.
You know, you're upset because your job at the auto plant is gone, or you're upset because your job in construction is gone. But
right. They're upset that the unions have been busted and
yeah,
the trade agreements
yeah.
have undermined the
yeah.
working man.
They're upset about the fact that the working class and the middle class in this country have
mm-hmm.
been hung out to dry with
mm-hmm.
this administration.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of those people voted for this guy, you
mm-hmm.
know, and they don't want to say, hey, the guy I helped, you know, put in there has basically destroyed, you know, my son's future.
They'd rather just say the Mexicans.
And they'd rather say it's these darn Mexicans, it's these darn Latinos, you know, and it's, you want to say, this is a capitalist country, man, we can't run without inexpensive labor.
Sure,
you know?
And there is definitely a solution to the problem, but let's, like I just said, I'm going to throw that away. There's a solution to the problem, and we'll get to that next week, because we've got it all solved. But Michelle Green has written this song, and it's on the, you can go to a link to her site through markmaron.com, or it's Michelle Green, Green with an E, .com, correct?
Yes, yes.
What's, and the name of this song is again?
Es Piedra y Libertad.
Just a little taste of that
mordita,
song.
As they say.
Now, when you're hearing your song played, when people are sitting here listening to it, do you get that rush of insecurity of like,
well,
wow?
No, you just hear it and you go, oh, you know, why didn't I sing that line differently? Or why, you know, it's just, this is what it is. It's pinned in time, and you know, for you, you wish you could always go back and go, I would have done that a little differently.
It's got to be better than acting, though.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine the difference of the pressure,
yeah.
Just the feeling of being able to sing and to be with a band and to be.
Well, I mean, you're
like
doing
that.
Your own music and you're doing your own, saying your own thing. You know, your own message, your own voice, your own everything.
Right.
And when you're an actor, I mean, I like being an actress, but it's, you know, you're a hired gun basically, and it's
and you've just got people stuffing someone else's lines in your mouth,
and a lot of times you're working on bad material with bad actors, and there's nothing worse.
There's nothing you can do about it.
It's so bad.
Yeah, it is bad.
It's painful. It's just at least like I can choose the guys in my band. I know that they're really good. You know.
Yeah. So where are you going to be touring at all? Or what's
touring. We're going on our first few dates this summer. CD's coming out later. I don't know, I'm not sure if it's coming out in a couple weeks or if it's coming out in a month and a half. There's a big debate about that. But it's. We're touring. We're going to be in the East Coast on like around the 26th of June.
It's going to be all be on the website?
Yeah. It's all. My website's actually being updated as we speak, so we'll probably get an under-construction thing right now, but it should, the next day or two, it should be up.
Well, excellent. So thanks for coming by.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate it. Michelle Green. That's michellegreen.com with an E at the end of that green.
Mm-hmm.
And have fun.
Thank you.
Okay.
Personally inspected by number 4, Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim. You know, in my excitement at the beginning of the show, I just let go of all my radio chops and did not set up the show properly. Because on this show, we have Michelle Green. She's going to be in here to... Oh, see, I got to pay more attention to my list. She was just here, and it was lovely.
But that's okay, you know.
It was nice. I would have liked to have played more. You can't just sit on the radio and listen to music. That's weird to your listeners. If you're just hanging out going, all right, let's just hang out and listen to this. But I guess that's what radio is. What am I saying?
You introduced
that's
her.
No. It was all. I mean, I set up her, but I didn't mention that John Amato is going to be on momentarily. I did not mention that Lila Azam Zagane, editor of My Sister, Guard Your Veil, My Brother, Guard Your Eyes, this beautiful little anthology of modern Iranian writers, philosophers, filmmakers, all with essays. To sort of tell us what really goes on in Iran, not just think they're a bunch of fanatical whack jobs. I'm going to get her on the phone.
These are all just pleasant surprises.
And also Johnny K Street's coming by because I blew him off yesterday. Also, Bruce Cherry might come by. We haven't decided whether we're going to put him on yet. Thank God these guys are in town for a couple of days. And you have a Wheel of Anger. I have a Dick of the Week. And we have these polls. I'm gonna get John Amato on the phone here in just a second. But these polls, my friend, look at this. This is a Ipso poll, my friends. AP Ipsos, 33% of the public approves of Bush's job performance. That is the lowest ever for him. 33%. All right. That compares with the 36% approval rating just last month. All right. 45% of self-described conservatives now disapprove of the president. Did you hear that number? 45% of people who call themselves conservatives. All right. That alongside of that 33% number. Beautiful. Just 1/4 of the public approves of the job Congress is doing. And now the poll says that's down 5 percentage points from last month. 65% of conservatives disapprove of Congress. 65%. We got a shot here. We only need to pick up 15 seats, or the Democrats do.
Yeah, if we can only find somebody good.
That doesn't even matter after a certain point. That's what they're banking on. What the hell does it matter? Yeah. None of them are any good. There's like three that are good, and know who they
put
are.
Put a blue hat on.
There's a few. But they got to be better. Maybe we can start turning back the legislation that these guys put into place that was disgusting. It's hard to know who the hell was good right now, Jim, because these guys had no choice. They had both houses. They had no choice but to go along with legislation they disagree with.
Think our guys can accept bribes better than their guys.
Well, I think they'll do it in a different way. They'll do it in a more democratic way.
Absolutely.
I don't even know if there are guys, because the bottom line is, in some of this legislation, a lot of them signed on to it. But let's get John on the phone and talk about what he's got going. The website crooksandliars.com is a clearinghouse of video and news clips that call the right wing out on their crap. Thank God it exists, because I just don't have time or know how to watch all the politically relevant clips that come out over a week. So we've got media gnome and web posting wizard John Amato, who filters through all the crap that pours out of the tube and grabs the gems and posts them. He's here with us again. Thanks for coming, John.
Hey, Mark. What's happening, my friend? It's interesting Friday.
It is. It's amazing. Porter Goss out of nowhere. Before we get into the politics, I want to tell you why I think your site is great. This is quicksandliars.com. For no real reason, other than it moved you while you were hanging out on your couch with your headphones on, you put the song Drive On by Incubus. just out of nowhere, it's like, oh, by the way, I was listening to this. I think it's important that you guys should listen to it.
I really like Incubus, and you know, I'm a musician.
Yeah.
And I really always post occasionally about music, and it's I'm going to start doing it more and more. It's just kind of fun, and people, you know, they either love the band, they hate the band, they like the band, and a lot of people said, I've never heard the song before. So.
Yeah, and you won't find that on Media Matters. You're not going to find any levity on Media Matters. That's John Amato's competitor. Though there's no competitors, we're all on the same team. But you get a little Incubus with the Crooks and Liars.
That's right. And yeah, no, they're friends. They're not competitors at all. They do theirs is, you know, they do a different service. I mean, they're more interested in all, you know, looking at all the biases, where I you know, target my viewers to a little bit different than they do. And, of course, they won't put on Incubus.
Well, look at that. Yeah, whatever former CIA analyst Ray McGovern did yesterday with Rumsfeld, he sure passed the audition, and he's showing up everywhere today. I saw him on Anderson Cooper. I saw him on Paula Zahn. You have him on your site. And you know what's amazing to me? I don't know if you noticed this, but he was ready for the gig, man. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. He's got integrity, and he's speaking the truth to this miserable power. And it's rare that you see somebody like him with the point of view he has speaking undebated on television.
No, it was really great. And, you know, he was down in Atlanta receiving an award, and so he went there because he was accepting an award. So he was at the facility, and, you know, Ray McGovern's been outspoken. He knows what he's talking about, and he had been reading articles about what Rumsfeld had said, and, you know, previously. So when he was in the arena, in the hall, and when the protesters got kicked out because they were yelling at him that he's a liar, you know, it just got to him, and he was able to get the mic and then actually made Rumsfeld lie.
And they were very diligent on CNN last night, actually, about showing that he did lie. And with Anderson Cooper, what was interesting to me, and I felt bad for those protesters, but there's no way for that type of protest in that type of environment, they're always going to be treated that way, and I think it's important that they speak up. But I feel proud that they did it, but I'm so glad that Ray McGovern stood up and made it legitimate, because they make on TV they make those protesters look like idiots sometimes.
Well, Rick, all they do is focus on look at these evil people. I mean, O'Reilly and also Britt Hume. What did they do? Oh, they didn't even talk about Ray McGovern. They just quote, you know, they just showed you a clip of like them dragging out protesters, and they distort the whole event.
Exactly.
And it was really great that McGovern did get that microphone.
I thought it was profound, because they were able to show last night on TV with video proof that he was lying, and we all know that he's lying. But the thing I I found impressive about McGovern is that this is a guy, Anderson Cooper asked him on the tube, he said, look, were you nervous? And he's like, I've been doing that for 35 years. I've been briefing vice presidents. I've been briefing people like Rumsfeld, secretaries of state. I've been secretaries of defense. He's made a life out of this, so he had no apprehension about doing it, and it was an amazing moment.
No, I mean, he worked for the CIA for 27 years. I mean, standing up and going after Rumsfeld, which he's completely justified and right in doing, is a drop in the hat for him.
Exactly.
And the fact was, you know, it's these politicians, they'll just never learn that we actually, they keep transcripts, they tape these shows, they're available, and if you out and out blatantly lie like Rumsfeld did, it'll be, I mean, one of my commenters immediately pulled up the Stephanopoulos transcripts. I just said, anybody, because I knew that they were there. I was just working on the post. I didn't have a chance to do the extra research.
You know, it's really amazing what's happening, though, because Republicans, as I just said in that poll, and conservatives are starting to wake up to this, too, and the whole thing's gone sour. And what's interesting that's really starting to happen with the conservatives is George Bush's belligerence, which is all he really banks his reputation on, is making him look retarded. And it's making him look retarded to conservatives, that they know he's doing a bad job, and they actually want him to admit that he screwed this war up, but he won't because he's retarded.
You know, it really is. When you just see the polls, obviously the only people left are the diehard supporters.
Other retarded people.
And, you know, and so, yeah, he will not. It's that arrogance of I have to be right no matter what. And even when I'm wrong, I got to be right. And he could have alleviated so much stuff. You know, they talk about the genius of Karl Rove. And I tell you, you know, Fitzgerald must really have been under his skin for the past year because I can't believe the blunders. I mean, the effect that it's had on the country, but just even politically speaking, the blunder nominating Harriet Myers.
Well, how much crap can he? I mean, really, it's like no matter what a genius he is, eventually the tricks are going to stop working when the corruption and the slime starts to ooze to the top to the point where you can't hide it anymore. I mean, eventually, you know, it's going to come out.
Without that, and let's face it, how many Republican officials have been like arrested in this administration and the cronyism?
Oh, it's going to keep happening.
It's just been unbelievable.
It's like the Port Augusta thing. I'm sure you got up there. I was reading this stuff yesterday. Some of this stuff I found on some sites yesterday that suggests that, and I believe it, that the reason Gaza is stepping down, first of all, he was ineffectual. Second of all, the CIA, half of the old guard is left because they find what's happening to their agency despicable and that they took the rap for something they didn't do. Port Augusta was an operative, and he brought in partisan politics into the agency. And I think that he's going down because he is involved with these Wilkes parties. These parties that were held by that Brent Wilkes, who was what's his name's patron, Duke Cunningham.
The Dukester. Yeah. I mean, it's coming out more and more. And Josh Marshall, Talking Points Memo, has been covering this really good. And we actually, you know, have a new name, you know, Hookergate. And, his number three man, Dusty Fogo, I think, of Fugo, has already admitted to it. You know, this is the funny thing. Well, I was at the hotel, and I was playing poker. Oh, but there were no hookers.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sure, there were no hookers. Right, you were there the only time they didn't have hookers.
Yeah, the one time they didn't have hookers.
You know, and the fact that, and we've all seen the way Bush, you know, it's like a mafia family where loyalty, and you know, if you read all his statements, loyalty is number one. And for Porter Goss to just resign and to drop up, you know, right on the spot. And again, you know, the White House correspondents are all saying that this came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it did. It felt like that. And they were trying to make it seem like he was supposed to, Bush was like, it was just temporary anyways. He's done a lot. No, the whole thing stinks. Something's up.
I mean, the guy's hardly been there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, okay, he's burnt out now. And also, I think it was David Ignatius had said also today on MSNBC that there's so much feeling. People are so upset in the CIA. They're so down. The morale. I mean, Porter Goss has just destroyed the morale in the whole CIA and their polygraphing people.
Oh, yeah, it's nothing what it used to be, because it's all under John Negroponte now, the National Intelligence Director, and the other half is with Rumsfeld over there in the Department of, in the DIA.
Right.
The Defense Department's intelligence arm. I mean, that's like an $80 billion agency, and the CIA is nothing. It's been gutted. But the, I think the one real great clip you got up there, too, on Crooks and Liars, which you can't really see anywhere. Well, you probably can, but you've got it. I never saw it. It's a clip that, from the White House press correspondence dinner of a second camera that was locked on Bush during the Colbert video presentation when his audition tape for White House press spokesman was running. And it's interesting to sit and look at it and try to interpret his reaction, you know, because you want to say, like, oh, he's pissed. Look at him. He's about to snap. But I thought more than anything else, he was detached and arrogant, and he looked kind of small, you know, even though he was fuming. He looked like a child to me.
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting perspective because I think it was ABC News. It comes from an ABC News report where they just had the cameras trained on him the whole time. And Dan Frumkin, who writes the great column on the Washington Post Online, really detected it. And it's like, just check him out and check out his behaviors. And then when he notes, you know, when he says roll, he twitches and he does this. And it really gives you just a different perspective. And I think it's important for us, you know, not even just about Stephen Colbert's, you know, routine. It's just, you know, to watch him, you know, thinking nobody's paying attention. It's very interesting.
Well, yeah, because he exudes a lack of gravitas. He exudes a lack of decorum and a lack of integrity and character that you would expect a president to have in those candid moments. And I think those are very telling. He's just a guy, you know, who lucked into a job, you know, and you really feel that when he's sitting there by himself.
I mean, I think it was also on an ABC News where, you know, a report, I think it was, I forget the report of Ms. Vargas, but where he was being interviewed and, like, his best friends from Texas come over and they call him Mr. President. I mean, you know, can you imagine your friends that you've known for your whole life?
Yeah.
And they you got to be called Mr. President?
Yeah, instead of doofus, which is what they used to call you. Hey, John Amato, crooksandliars.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, my friend. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, Jim, you seem like, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the show, you got a lot on your mind, something's eating you. What do you say we give a spin to the old Wheel of Anger? Okay, then the wheel lands on, why isn't Dick Cheney dead yet? All right, when we come back, we'll get into why isn't Dick Cheney dead yet on the Jim Rowe Wheel of Anger. Stay with us.
And now, Slow Rock at Supermax. Mark Maron.
Ow! Woo! Ow! Thank you, Jim.
Yeah.
We spun your Wheel of Anger. I don't want to deter from that. I want you to lock in. Get focused. The Wheel of Anger landed on, why isn't Dick Cheney dead yet? So take it away. Ride the bile train.
Thank you, Mark Maron. You know, next month, Vanity Fair magazine will unveil its most chilling expose on the deterioration of the human body since Demi Moore posed nude for the August 91 issue, revealing she was pregnant with Ashton Kutcher. Now, I'm not talking about the Elephant Man, Michael Jackson, or even Mr. French on Family Affair. I'm talking about that festering mass of intellectual and moral swampland we all refer to as the President of the United States, Dick Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, let's
yes.
look at the hard, ugly facts revealed in the June issue of Vanity Fair.
Okay.
One, Keri Russell will not be cutting her hair again, and she's got nice tits. Two, Anderson Cooper is even more boring in print than on TV.
Yeah.
And three, $1.50 an issue is way too much to pay for this kind of crap. And four, yeah, there's a fourth one, no one knows why Dick Cheney is still alive. It baffles the best minds of science. Look at him. He's only 65. I keep forgetting that. This is in 1820. 65-year-olds do not look like that anymore. He's at least 30 pounds overweight, and his arteries are now harder than his penis ever was.
Yeah.
He's riddled with gout and looks like Dorian Gray's picture. Why isn't Dick Cheney dead yet? Nah, don't get me wrong, Mark. I'm not a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
I'm not wishing any physical harm on any member of the Bush administration or family. Let's get that straight.
Okay.
That would be too easy for them. No, I'm just intellectually curious as to the science behind this strange anomaly. And I know this subject has come up millions of times before, talk show hosts and stand-up comics and everywhere, making fun of Dick Cheney's health, accusing him of being a vampire or harvesting organs from illegal aliens or being a robot or attaining his strength by kissing the frozen lips of Ted Williams' head. I've heard it all before, Mark. And it's all idle speculation. Because the actual details of Cheney's physical condition are a closely guarded secret linked to national security. And I know why. Uh-huh. I believe the Bush administration has the secret to eternal life and is hiding it from the rest of us. I also believe it is somehow linked to strange Masonic rituals revolving around the 12-step program, a mystical belief in the dark powers of Barbara Bush's guano-laden womb, and beer.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. I believe every winter solstice, the Cheneys gather at Crawford. There in a submerged grotto, Nubian slaves tether Barbara Bush between two mighty cedars and tranquilize her with rhino medicine.
Yeah.
I believe the body of Dick Cheney is then physically inserted into her menacing uterus, utilizing some abandoned mining apparatus and an old railroad spur. Ooh. I believe that for the next 6 days, the bat-filled cave of Barbara Bush infuses into the body of Dick Cheney the necessary life forces to survive the unthinkable in a process too strange and too powerful for ordinary humans to understand. And I believe this all happens in front of three witnesses and a notary public. And I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to Earth. And I believe this is my responsibility to tell you this. You've just taken a ride on Jim's wheel of anger. Only this time, it was more like Jim's wheel of discussion. I've been Earl, and you've just been Earled.
Wow, Jim, thanks, man. He certainly gave us all a lot to chew on mentally.
Man, somebody wiped me down.
Yeah, wow, you're sweating.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of your hair color's coming out and running down your face.
Oh, man, well, you know, it's only in the face of the best toupee in business sitting across from me here.
Where the hell you get Vanity Fair for $1.50? When was the last time you bought that magazine?
Well, that's the subscription rate.
It is?
Yeah.
You get subscription to Vanity Fair?
No, I don't. That's why.
You're just making it up.
The subscription rate.
Okay.
$1.50.
Oh, man.
Per issue.
That was good stuff, buddy. You know, in a few minutes, we're going to talk to Lila Azam Zagane.
It's easy for you to say.
It's not, and I hope I'm getting it right. I have a hard time with Iranian names. I've interviewed a couple of the people that appear in her book. The book looks very good, because I think we all, even the most progressives of us, misinterpret exactly what Iran is. We just see it as a bunch of religious whack jobs.
It's a nation of youth.
Yes. It's like 50% of the country is people under 25, and they're all just, you know, chomping at the bit to be alive and excited. And apparently there's a fairly well-festering social life underneath the mullahs. The other thing I want you to do if you go to Crooks and Liars, there's a clip on there from Hardball with Chris Matthews I think it's important to look at of an Iraqi National Guard or an Iraqi military force being trained by the American forces, and when they are told that they have to leave their hometown of Fallujah, they go into some sort of angry protest and start stripping down and getting very upset. And I think it's great, once you separate it from whatever the hell Chris Matthews and whoever his dumb guest was talking about, is that it really shows you that there are tribal issues and sectarian issues in that country that are going to be obstacles in its ability to create a nationalized military forever. And it's very telling on that level, and it's a good piece of video, Crooks and Liars. Coming up next, Lila Azam Zagane.
And now, he's an ambient sleep eater, Mark Maron.
Yeah, lay off that Patrick Kennedy. Come on, folks. What did he do wrong? He didn't kill anybody. He had a problem. He's admitted to his problem. And whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I mean, it shouldn't surprise you. I mean, alcoholism and drug addiction is a family of origin type of disease. I mean, they don't even have a chance if they're going to try and get traction with that. That's ridiculous. Any congressman would get special treatment, even though he didn't get special treatment. I don't know where it stands right now, but I know he's admitted to maybe drying out a little bit and getting some help for himself. But come on, if they're going to try and land...
He's
know,
no Rush Limbaugh.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, it's ridiculous. Hey, look, folks, most Americans have no concept of the cultural history of Iran. Most Americans think Iran is just a theocratic Arab state full of religious nut jobs that want to blow up Israel and America. Some of that may be true, except the Arab part, but the truth of the matter is Iran has a sophisticated, exotic cultural history with eclectic and diverse social life that is driven by an inordinate number of young people. Like about 50% of the population, I think, is under 25. In the recent book, My Sister, Guard Your Veil, My Brother, Guard Your Eyes, 15 contemporary Iranian voices seek to shatter some of the misconceptions
we have about the country and the people. The editor of the collection is Lila Azam Zengene. She is on the phone with us right now. She writes for the New York Times occasionally, The Nation. She's taught at Harvard. Hello, Lila.
Hello.
I got your name right, I think.
Absolutely right.
Thank God. First off, so let's talk about some of the biggest misconceptions that Americans have about Iran. Obviously, I hit a few of them, but if you could explore some of that with me, because I've met some of the people in your book. I have met Azadeh Moavani.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to her, and she was the first time that I was ever like kind of blown away and really learned that there is a teeming cultural life, a teeming nightlife, a very active youth population. What do we not know about Iran?
Well, there's so much, unfortunately, that you don't know, you meaning Americans and generally people in the West don't know about Iran, because unfortunately, lately, in the headlines, the voice of Mr. Ahmadinejad has buried the voice of all of us, you know, the civil society, the men and women who are out of Iran or within Iran. And there's so, you know, one of the greatest misconceptions, of course, you just mentioned, is that most people think that we're Arabs, and of course we're not. We're in a very peculiar spot in the Middle East because we're one of only three non-Arab countries in the region, with Israel and Turkey, and that has very strong geopolitical implications. Also, we're very different from our neighboring Arab countries in terms of the freedoms of our women. The women are extremely educated in Iran. You have about 60% of university students in Tehran who are women, and they can work, they can drive, they have public jobs, and that makes a world of a difference.
And that also, I guess, would account for the successful books by women coming out of Iran.
Absolutely. It's been miraculous in a way. Over the last 10 to 20 years, many of the most famous Iranians that have emerged are all women, except perhaps for Mr. Kiarostami, the filmmaker. It's women who have, and this has been a long trend in Iranian history, they've been educated since the mid-30s, and that has begun to bloom in the society. They've been extraordinarily active, they've been very good writers, very good artists, and all they need now is a platform to just express their voice and their opinion, and to express that other side of Iran, all the colors that are in Iran. Abroad, we have a tendency to see Iran as just a black bloc, a black Islamic bloc, but that is not the case. The reality is variegated. It's full of nuance and colors and just desire for a different future.
You're getting me excited. I want to go there.
You should. It's a good and interesting time to be in Iran. The tourism industry is not developed at all, and contrary to myth and misconception, foreigners are very much welcome, and the Iranian civil society loves American people, and they like to have them over. They're very curious and interested, and they themselves, they wear Nike shoes, and you know, they love to watch DVDs of Hollywood films.
Well, that's the biggest misconception, is that what I didn't realize until I talked to one of the women who was written in your book. She wrote I want to make sure I pronounce her name right, Azadeh Moavani?
Moavani, yes.
The author of Lipstick Jihad. Is that I didn't realize that a lot of people who live in Iran are sort of like, yeah, the mullahs are kind of they're kind of pests, and you know, we pretend like they're powerful, but we kind of do what we want to do.
Absolutely, and that's what she has a beautiful essay in this book, and the name of her essay is Sex in Time of Mullahs, and she describes some Pasolinian scenes of North Tehran and orgies going on in North Tehran, and yes, many people think that mullahs are pests. On the other hand, also, it's not all of the reality. There aren't orgies in all of the country, but certainly Iranian, both young men and women, have become very free. They have very thriving private lives. They do what they want, and they have found all kinds of way to undermine the authority of the regime and this, you know, yes?
I'll be honest with you, it's hard to find orgies in America.
It's true, and that's one of the extraordinary contradictions. You know, the more repressive, the more you're going to do things, the more these young people, you said 50% under 25 years old, that's correct. In fact, there are also 70% under 30, which is unprecedented, and they are living.
Are they eating the old people? Where are the old people?
Well, you know, unfortunately, we had a very long war with Iraq where 1 million people died on both sides. So there were a great number of casualties in Iran during the war. And then the revolution also took its toll.
Yeah.
And now you have all these people who are going to university, and they're also very connected to the outside world. They're very much on the internet. For instance, there has been a 3,000% boom of the internet over the last 3 years.
Now, what about the political ramifications? And what, you know, I mean, we can't escape the reality that there is a sort of saber-rattling standoff between America and Iran. I don't know what it's going to amount to, but some people have said it could amount to Armageddon in no small order. Now, I have to assume that many of these young people who live in Iran have got to have something to say about this politically.
Of course, and in a way, this is what, you know, this is what this little book is all about, and it's all these different voices. And I think there are two things here. On the one hand, if America continues to antagonize Iran and also the world community in terms of a military standoff, then they will antagonize the Iranian population as well, because historically there's been a trend. Every time a great power like the Soviet Union or Britain, Great Britain, or even America has tried to antagonize the Iranian people, these people have rallied around their government and they have stood firmly to say this is our national identity and we're entitled to have a weapon and anything else, you know, nuclear military power. But on the other hand, truly, at heart, the people of Iran do not want a military standoff. They'd rather talk to the West and be more open. And that's right now, it's a conundrum, but it's also, there is hope still for the UN and for America to engage them in dialogue, to lift sanctions, and not to antagonize them.
Good.
By antagonizing them, they will play into the hands of the conservative president and regime.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad there's still hope from where you're standing. That's good. Now, let's talk, if we can, for a couple minutes. Why don't you just go down the list of people who have contributed to the book so I don't have to mispronounce a lot of names, and tell us just briefly, you know, who they are and what their essay is about, without going too in detail, because
sure.
I want people to buy the book.
Well, we have, of course, an essay by Azar Nafisi, who wrote Reading Lolita in Tehran, and her essay is called The Stuff That Dreams Are Made Of, and she explains how when you're stuck in an Islamist regime, perhaps one of the only way out is imagination and mm-hmm. literature, and she explains how that might be where literature can become a political weapon against fundamentalists.
And you also have Satrapi?
Marjan Satrapi, who
I've
wrote
read her stuff, yeah, Persepolis.
Persepolis, the comic strip, and she wrote a very funny essay about how, you know, people all take us for Arabs and terrorists, and of course the reality is not that at all. The beginning, she has, I know by heart her first paragraph, she says, we are stuck really somewhere between Scheherazade's fame, 1001 Nights, and the bearded terrorist with his manic wife disguised as a crow. By way of flattery, we are told that we are Persians and that Persia was a great empire. Otherwise, we are Iranians. The Persians are in Delacroix's painting and they smoke opium with Victor Hugo. Mm. As for the Iranians, they take American hostages. They detonate bombs and they're pissed at the West. They were discovered after the 1979 revolution. And
yeah.
That kind of sums up the book.
Yeah. You've got Reza Aslan in there as well?
Yes.
I talked to him. Yes. He's a good guy.
He's wonderful. He's a bright young writer and journalist who wrote No God But God, and he has a beautiful essay here called From Here to Molocracy, where he explains that Iran, in reality, is no longer a theocracy governed by God, but it's a mullocracy governed by a group of mullahs who have decided to create their own laws in spite of the fact that they're only educated in religious history and not at all in international economics or policy.
That sounds like here. that's starting to happen in America.
It's true.
And also one other person, just to, the woman who was nominated for the House of Sand and Fog.
Shohreh Ardashlu, exactly.
There was no way I could have pronounced that. She wrote, go ahead.
And yes, she's written, well, I did a conversation with her. I've done a conversation with two or three artists who felt more comfortable speaking than writing texts. And she's written about what it meant for her to become an actress outside of Iran and to be recognized and to become, to represent something for all the women who are still stuck under the yoke of the repressive regime and who dream of being free, who dream one day of having the platform to express themselves.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great book, and I think it helped me out, because I think it's important that Americans and people around the world see what is going on and the voices of expression that are there. So thank you for joining us, Lila Azam Zengene.
Thank you.
Did I do it right?
You're perfect.
The book is My Sister, Guard Your Veil, My Brother, Guard Your Eyes, Uncensored Iranian Voices. You can get it at my website. It'll link to her website. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much, Mark.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was charming. Man, she was great. Okay, so let's move on. I'm having a weird moment like Letterman had with what's her name last night? What's her name?
You watched Letterman last night?
Yeah, what's her name? What is it? Yeah, Julia Roberts, that woman.
Really?
You know, she's a movie star or something. But, of course, their history goes back. But he gets all juiced up when, this woman, Lilo, was so excited. I was excited. You know, I wanted to learn more. But Dave and Julia was great. I love it when Dave gets disarmed and all googly. I think, of course I watch Letterman. I like watching him sometimes. Pearl Jam was on. They were pretty good for a bunch of guys my age. Hey, so let's do this. We've got... Well, this is the wrong piece of paper. Johnny K Street in the wings and more stuff, more comedy. What a show. Wow. Huh? Huh, Jim? Say something.
Bursting at the rims with comedy. And now, back to a walking time bomb, doing yoga. Mark Maron.
I did. I did it again last night. It's not just yoga, it's just power yoga. It's got nothing to do with peace of mind. It's got to do with locking the core up. Just right, two times, man, and I feel like a...
What does that mean?
Well, in yoga, you work from your core. It's right. It's in your lower abdominals.
Right.
And that's where all your energy comes and goes in and out of. And if you lock into it and you tap into it and you use it, you just go a couple of times, and already I feel like everything's connected. You know, I'm very in touch with the whole thing, and everything's locked down.
What does that mean?
I don't know, Jim. You know what I mean? Go for yourself. You know, I can't explain. What do you want me to get poetic with you? I feel better. Isn't that enough? Can't you tell by my voice? I feel better, damn it.
Yeah, I can tell, Mr. Maron.
We get a lot of emails here at the show, and I figure let's read this one. Hello, Mark. Once again, you liberals are totally wrong about immigration. More pie in the sky instead of facing reality. Oh, no. What's happening? Oh, God. Oh, God.
And now, from Radio Halliburton, it's America's favorite late-night far-right radio show, Shark and Awe, with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good evening, neocons. Radio Halliburton, where the truth hurts. Hey, everybody. Have you heard that new Spanish version of the national anthem? Well, here it is. Lo siento, El Charco had too much con queso. No fundido. Here's that anthem for you. Stop. Por favor. It's land of the free, Hernando, not land of the free lunch. Jose, can you see my point? Huh? Get it? Jose, can you see? Hey, immigrants, speak English. Oh, wait, let me say that again so you can understand me. Speak English! I came to America to make a name for myself, and now I spray paint it all over town. Don't I look macho in my hairnet? Oh, sí. I only pretend not to speak English, stupid gringos. Look out, Enrique. I think your lawnmower just fell off the back of the truck. Hey, let's read some email. Here's one from Sunflower in Berkeley. Put on your hip waders.
Dear Mark the Shark, immigrants are a vital part of our economy and our culture. Don't you have any compassion for these people?
Are you kidding me? Mark the Shark has nothing but compassion for these people. In fact, right now I want to teach my Spanish listeners some useful phrases in English. Repeat after me. I'm sorry, sir. I'll turn down the leaf blower. Or how about this one? Maybe I have enough children. Or how about this one? Sorry to be a burden on your beautiful country. I'll be going home now.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Mark?
Mark.
What?
Mark.
What happened?
What happened?
Did I black out?
Man, you freaked out.
I did?
Yeah.
Why doesn't anyone stop me when that happens?
Because it's so entertaining.
Oh, man, I'm so ashamed of myself. I got to go back to yoga again tonight, then.
Get centered with your inner
Well, you just told thing. Me. Whoa. Didn't you? Your significant other, Heather, has requested that you go to yoga.
Yeah.
Does she go?
Yes, she does.
I think it's not the same kind. See, I go to power yoga.
I do. Yeah, I can see that.
It's power yoga.
In your tights?
Yeah. No,
I
don't
wear... Fistful of granola and the...
That's interesting that you've had this weird vision of me in tights with granola. What the hell's wrong with you?
What other vision would it be besides weird?
I'm wearing the shorts or maybe some yoga pants. They're not tights. They're the drapey kind of hippie
buttless?
Pants. Of course, buttless, because I go in West Hollywood, and it's a lot of gay people go, but it's not a gay thing just because we wear buttless pants. And you can wear buttless pants. There's one woman there. Why do you got to bring this stuff up? No, I go to the Hollywood Y.
Yes.
It's a big class, very popular. The guy Joe, he teaches the class. He's a very popular teacher. There's not a lot of that spiritual chatter going on.
What
There's
kind of music in the background? Is
he played Tool the other day.
Tool.
Yeah, he opened with Tool for a yoga class. Now, that's pretty profound. And I didn't mind it, but there was part of me that was saying, this is a little heavy for yoga. But what it is, it's power yoga. It's sort of a riff on it. He would be mad if I said it's like Bikram. It's not. He kicks the heat up. You do a few vinyasas. You get going. You kind of go through a couple of poses. And then you kind of lay into it. And you go at a faster pace. And you're doing, you're just holding poses, but not for too long. But you go one after the other. And I'm telling you, I'm like a fist right now inside, a good fist, a healthy fist, a fist of resistance
you got a
coming
fist
from my
you
kundalini,
right,
my friend. Huh?
You got a fist inside you right now? Is that what we...
Hey, bastard. You bastard. No, I'm saying that my chakras
what's going on? They're
operating properly. I don't know. You went somewhere with buttless pants, and now we're fisting. We'll be back with the dick of the week.
Now he's a one-man charm offensive, Mark Maron.
That's right. That's me. I'm charming. Hey, folks, look. Unbelievable. Porter Goss going down because I think he was involved in Hookergate, as John Amato said. There's no doubt about it. We'll get into that in just a second. Let's get into some other stuff here. There are a lot of big stories in the news week, my friends. In the news this week, my friends. Can I say it right? I'm excited that this guy is now coming back and forth regularly because of the Vegas connection. A lot of big stories in the news, so let's get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny Castree. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby. It's nice to be in Los Angeles, Mark, in the middle of a gas crisis.
Yeah.
It's over $4 now. That's like buying gas at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Last night I saw someone do a drive-by shooting from a bus.
Yeah.
It's got to be frustrating for people who have more than one car like yourself. You know, I heard Leno ran over a gas station attendant yesterday with a 58 Buick Roadmaster. Then he came back and hit him again with a 36 Studebaker.
Do you think the gas prices are going to go even higher, Johnny?
I'm giving 50 to 1 on it, baby.
Nice.
Pretty soon the only person who won't be on a bicycle will be the president. He's still not sure how to operate one.
Yeah.
Didn't he illegally invade Iraq and wipe half of it off the map so he could steal their oil? What happened to that?
No kidding. Hey, but gas prices are definitely going up. You're right about that, Johnny. I can't lose. Put me down for 500 on that. Also, the way things are going, what kind of odds do you have on the GOP losing control of the House in the next election?
I'm glad you asked. That's going off at even money. It'll be the only honest money that's been made in that town in over 5 years. It hasn't been this easy to buy someone on the Hill since Washington had slaves.
Oh, man. Give me a grand on that one. Speaking of K-Street, what was the reaction to the May Day marches, Johnny? What are the odds of Bush actually creating a guest worker program?
Forget about it. At this point, Bush couldn't create a rash if he rubbed himself with poison ivy. But I'm not waiting for George Bush to start a guest worker program. I've created job opportunities for our neighbors from the South myself. I'm happy to announce that I've recently partnered with two silent investors from Tijuana in a business venture that I'll be premiering next month. You know, Mark, for years, cockfighting in this country has been relegated to poor Mexican neighborhoods with a minimum amount of action.
Mm-hmm.
We gringos have been slow to pick up on it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all going to change next month when JK Gaming takes cockfighting to the next level.
Whoa, Johnny, you're going into the cockfighting business?
And business is the key word, Mark. business, which will be good for Mexican workers, good for the economy, and good for everyone who gets in on the ground floor. Starting June 9th, I'll be premiering Johnny K Street's Ultimate Cage Match Cockfights in Prim, Nevada.
Wow! Ultimate cockfighting. Is that even legal, Johnny?
Legal, exciting, and delicious. I call it Ultimate Cockfighting because the bouts will take place in a large steel chicken cage with no rules or referees. Mark, I don't look at this as a gaming venture with projected revenues of $5 million, which could go up to $8, $10, $15 if you add in merchandising, TV rights, and a gourmet line of cockfight chicken specialties
right.
made with that special south of the border spiciness.
Mm.
I look at Johnny K's Ultimate Cage Match Cockfights as a way for immigrant laborers, gamblers, and any interested legal citizen to buy into their piece of the American dream, minus my percentage overhead and operating costs.
Wow, that's great. Great to know, Johnny, if I'm ever in Prim, Nevada. But look, buddy, getting back to the president, his poll numbers are hitting record lows. Do you think they bottomed out yet?
Mark, the president's poll numbers are going down faster than a hooker at the Watergate hospitality suite.
That's right.
I'm giving 5-1. They'll drop another 5 points by the end of next month. And if you want to go long range, I'd say single digits by New Year's Eve, if there is a New Year's Eve.
All right, well, that sounds like easy money to me, Johnny. Put me down for 1,000 scoots.
You are down.
Thanks, man.
It's official, Mark. The majority of Americans think George Bush is at best a moron and at worst a dangerous psychopath who just happens to also be a moron.
Yeah.
You know, every time I come to Los Angeles, some of the biggest stars of movie and television are calling me around the clock. And they always ask me the same question. Johnny, what can we do in between projects to show the American people that we're all in this together? The rich, beautiful, and famous like us, and the poor, fat, and invisible like the rest of America.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Stars are calling you? But, I mean, I have a show. I'm the guy
Speaking
who's
going to
be...
Speaking of which, your show is the perfect place to make this announcement. I've decided to get proactive.
Uh-huh.
This July 4th, K Street Entertainment, along with the Las Vegas Casino Owners Association, Sony Pictures, and Jamba Juice, is bringing Hollywood to Vegas for the largest pro-impeachment anti-Bush rally ever held. Or as people are already calling it, K-Stock.
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 Yeah.
3 days of peace, love, and blackjack, baby. We're going to be featuring one Vegas headliner after another, plus Susan Sarandon, Sean Penn, George Clooney, Ed Begley, I've already signed on, and Angelina Jolie has offered to adopt the first 5 homeless kids through the gate.
Wow, that is incredible.
She's a sweet kid.
That is incredible, Johnny. Really, congratulations. You are doing great work, my friend.
I'm glad you think so. I have you penciled in for the third show first night. You'll go on about 2 a.m. between the close-up magic of Carl Constantine and Rick Santini's Long Live the King, an Elvis tribute.
Rick Santini. Who?
Oh, that guy's fantastic.
All right.
He's a good kid.
Okay.
His father owes me a lot of money. It's good to have your support, Mark. Sure. We need to get the word out. Mm-hmm. We're going to bring a little bit of Vegas and Hollywood to the impeachment movement. And as you know, Mark, a little bit of Hollywood and Vegas goes a long way.
Yes, sir.
That's it from K Street, baby. I got a meeting with the Cartoon Network. The next time you see me, Mark, I may be animated. I'm out of here.
All right. See you later, Johnny. Thanks for coming by. I love that he comes out here now. Take it easy. He's got the chains, the whole business. Hey, people, we here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society. So every week or so, we bestow an honor upon one of the distinguished citizens of this country whose actions most closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show Dick of the Week. Our near-perfect dick today is a woman, which makes her, I guess, a dickette. She was brought to my attention by a blogger, DRKJST, Dark Jest, I'm assuming. And this happened on a panel on the Lou Dobbs Show. All right, the topic of conversation was this Colbert joke.
The greatest thing about this man is he's steady. You know where he stands. He believes the same thing Wednesday that he believed on Monday, no matter what happened Tuesday. Events can change. This man's beliefs never will.
So Dobbs was there, and Stephanie Miller was on, and some other idiot, and this woman, Martha Zoller, and they all kept talking about Imus and how much flack he got for nailing Clinton one year and how the liberal media was giving Colbert a pass, blah, 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 blah. Look, folks, let's not forget, Imus was not funny, and there is really no way to deny that Colbert was funny. All right, fine, you can think he went too far, but he was funny. So right-wing pundicant Martha Zoller had this to say.
Well, certainly there is a liberal bias, and he is picking on George Bush, who the media doesn't like, versus Imus, who was picking on Clinton, who the media loved, okay? And so that you really see a little bit of a bias. What came to mind after seeing Flight 90, United 93 this weekend, is 9/11 was a Tuesday. So that was an he probably didn't even think about that, but for me, having lost friends in the World Trade Towers, that was the first thing I thought of.
Oh, it's repulsive. She gratuitously used 9/11 to make her point. That is rule one in the book of Dick. Rule two is to snarl while speaking, which Zoeller couldn't pull off with her doughy, seemingly dead face. Look, if that was the first thing she thought of in the middle of a comedy routine that had nothing to do with 9/11, someone did something bad to her that she stuffed away in her sad head, and we're all paying for it. But it makes her the perfect dick. In a rare moment of laser-like levity and honesty that utterly diminished everything this president wants us to believe, all she could think was how can I use what has become a hackneyed propaganda tactic that trivializes the deaths of 3,000 people to exploit the pain of the country and reopen their fear, anger, and hatred to serve my personal conservative agenda to stifle debate, freedom, and expression. While watching her blather piously, my friends, I couldn't help but have a moment of hating our freedoms because they allow self-serving, repressive right-wing media whores like Martha Zoeller airtime to buzzkill and enlightened moment of knife-like satire that cut through the administration's lies like they were butter. I would like to fry Martha Zoeller in that butter. And the bottom line is, folks, is that joke doesn't even hold for that one tragic incident, because that was the day Bush did change everything, and that was the day that began the tactic that Martha Zoeller so freely used, connecting 9/11 to anything in order to disseminate a failed ideology. Zoeller talked about her friend that was killed on 9/11. Well, it's too bad Martha Zoeller wasn't on her way up in an elevator to meet her friend for breakfast that day, because she is guilty of being the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Week. Yeah, how do I really feel?
That was nice. I like that.
You like that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble for that one. I can feel that coming. Hey, look, I just want to remind people, and I think that they'll enjoy this, that 33% of the public approves of Bush's job performance. 33%. You know who else had that around those numbers? As far as a president at this point in his little terms there? Nixon. That's the only one.
Who,
I mean, yeah.
Who are these people?
It's unbelievable. In the past six decades, only one president, and I'm going to read from this, had a lower job approval rating 6 months before a midterm election, and that was Nixon. And with this type of momentum going into the midterms, either the Democrats are just going to have to, you know, start crying in public and saying, I can't do it, to not get the House back. That's what I feel. Or else, and this has always been the problem for me, is that because of the tone of this administration, what we've grown to expect from them, you have to be afraid of our own, of the Republican administration. Literally, we've had this conversation before, that there's part of me that says, when they're cornered like this, when the chips are down this low, who the hell knows what they're capable of doing or allowing to happen in order to make the country at least believe in them again in the level of fear. You see, that's the one point where Bush's poll numbers don't take the hit that he does in other places, is national security and handling terrorism. How people can separate terrorism from the war, I don't know what.
Which brings me to those 80 people who were pardoned posthumously in Montana recently.
But what are you talking about?
The World War One seditionists who spoke out against the war.
Yeah.
You know, they all went to jail because of it.
Do you want to set up the story a little bit?
Well, you know, I wrote a book about 80 people who were sent to jail because they spoke out against World War One.
Okay.
And Montana had some pretty stiff sedition laws.
Yeah. And now they've been pardoned?
Yes, they've been pardoned. It's taken 80 years.
By the state or by the president?
By the governor.
The governor of the state?
The governor of Montana, yes.
So that had nothing to do with Bush, because he probably wouldn't pardon him.
No. But, you know, it'll take something else, like, you know. Yeah. World War One, another huge national emergency.
I just think it's great.
Get people on his side.
I just hope that doesn't happen. I hope there's not a secondary Northwoods plan. But look, I just want to put this out there, because I don't want to hear about it from you people that have been taking me to task over aspartame. All right? Just because a European food safety expert... They said that an Italian study last year wrongly concluded that aspartame led to higher rates of lymphoma and leukemia in rats does not mean it's good for you. Do you understand? Just because they found out that this colony of rats had respiratory problems, how the hell do you find that out years after the fact? It's like, hey, this study can't be right. These rats had bronchitis. And you know, when you give aspartame to rats with bronchitis, of course they get brain tumors. I mean, what are you, stupid? I mean, let's go. And the bottom line is, it's not the issue of brain tumors necessarily. The issue is really clearly doesn't make you retarded because of the ethyl alcohol in it, or what becomes, you know, formaldehyde or ethanol in your system and poisons your neurosynapses. Your neurotransmitters become all screwy and you get symptoms like lupus or MS. I mean, that hasn't been I'm sticking by it. I've been off aspartame for over a month. Been off cigars for over a month, I think, about.
That's where you're anti-American. Retardation is good for this country.
That's what they're trying to do, man. I mean, Donald Rumsfeld pushed it through at Searle in the 70s. You know, George H.W. Bush was the CEO of Eli Lilly. Come on, man. How clear does it have to be? Connect the dots. Was that a plane that went into the Pentagon? Do you understand where I'm going with this? Do you understand? Okay, enough said. When we come back, we're going to do the short order news, and I'm going to show you my yoga pants.
If you really believe Mark Maron is the one and true Christ, you won't want to miss his short order news coming up next. Amen.
Now it's time to screen his cargo, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. I'm telling you, man. Everything changes today. Everything changes today. I've hit bottom. I had that hamburger yesterday, which we talked about. And last night I tapered off a little chicken sausage. But now I'm going back, man. It's going to be brown rice and non-alcoholic beer and greens for a couple of days.
I had lunch today at a place that had you cooked meat there, and it smelled like just bad meat death. How do people do that regularly? I don't understand. Just, you know, that meat smell that's on the counters and stuff?
It's weird. It's interesting because some people do register that as burning flesh. Others register it as, yummy. But it is really the smell of burning flesh. Did you hear about this? This really bummed me out. A Picasso, the portrait of his mistress, Dora Maar, with cat, sold for $95 million at Sotheby's the other day. And what pissed me off is I had a bid in on eBay, and I was way off.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was...
What was your bid?
It was like $200. But you got to start somewhere with that thing.
Man, that is really way off.
I know. I'm stupid.
Don't you have any advisors? Or some kind of financial expert helping you out with these things?
Like Andy Dick said, I need to get a MySpace advisor. Can I read those numbers again for people? I already just read them. And you mark my words, Porter Goss implicated in Hookergate, all right? It's very clear to me that this guy, co-conspirator number one in the Duke Cunningham bribery thing, Brent Wilkes, a military contractor who was aligned with this guy, executive director of the CIA, Kyle Dusty Fogo. They've known each other forever since they were kids in college. Okay, one of Wilkes's companies, Archer Logistics, won a contract to provide supplies to CIA agents in Afghanistan and Iraq, despite having no previous experience with such work. Okay, so this guy was in with the CIA. This is the guy that was buying the hookers. This was the guy that was providing the poker parties. This was the guy that was providing the corrupt limo service to drive these skanky congressmen and political hacks and whatnot to these parties. And one of them was a CIA guy, and there's other ones implicated, maybe somebody way high up. And Porter Goss resigned, and this stuff just came out the other day, within the last week or so.
No, Porter Goss said he was never at any parties with prostitutes.
I don't think it's come out. I don't think – well, you know, the issue is not – see, still, look, I know a lot of comics. I got a lot of – they're friends. I know guys that use prostitutes. And it's not my bag, and I'm not comfortable with it. But the bottom line is that's not the issue, whether they use prostitutes. It's not the issue whether they play poker.
If you
issue,
lie about it.
It's lying about it and doing it on the dime of a military contractor that is doing it in order for them to provide, you know, legislation that they want or provide CIA contracts like this guy. I mean, that's where the real issue is. It's not the hookers. Who the hell cares about the hookers? It's the fact that they're there at the behest of a military contract up to no good, and they're being bought. Well, isn't that the issue?
Well, to me, the issue is kind of like, I want to know that our public servants are also capable of love.
Or some version of it.
Affection during sexual intercourse. Yeah. That would be a nice thing for me to think about.
There's plenty of hookers that are good people, and they're doing a job. There's a hooker union, I think, out in Vegas, and I can't...
Amsterdam's got good hooker action. I mean, I'm saying that's good for them because they're all unionized.
I just read that there's a brothel in Germany that's actually starting to cater to beginners. That literally, they've got a package for virgins and people who have never been to a hooker before.
I think
before.
That's sweet.
That's genius. What are you kidding me? Bringing in new people, new market. Look, say what you want about prostitution, but that is not the big issue here. It's not them having sex with hookers.
All right? It's just not.
Aren't we all prostitutes in one manner or
That's another? One of my adages, if I could share it with you. The great philosophical question used to be, what is the meaning of life? And now I think the great philosophical question is, how am I being used, and am I okay with that? Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, a lot happened in the news today, and we don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. So here's tonight's second edition of the Mark Maron Show Short Order News. Many Democrats are concerned. What? Huh? What? A new AP poll suggests angry conservatives are helping to drive President Bush's approval ratings levels to new lows, people. Republicans are worried because after 6 years of the Bush administration, there are growing signs the voters would now like to try democracy. To try democracy. See, that joke went well, but I do stumble over these things, and I'm not sure I deliver them as well as I could. Let's try it again. Not that joke, but another one. Protesters repeatedly interrupted Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld during a speech yesterday, including former CIA analyst Ray McGovern. McGovern asked, "Why did you lie to get us into a war that caused these kinds of casualties and was not necessary?" Rumsfeld shot back, "I did not lie." Then Rumsfeld rolled his eyes and twirled his finger at his head in a circular motion, which didn't go over as well as he had hoped. That's a long way to go. Yeah. Microsoft Corporation Chairman Bill Gates said this week that he wishes he wasn't the world's richest man, because no matter how much you spend and spend, money can never wipe away the horrible shame of being a pudgy nerd with hygiene problems. And that's the Mark Maron Show Short Order News for today. This is Friday. This is it, folks. And this is the end of the week. It's been a great week. Jim, I think we did good work.
This is a good week, yeah.
Job-wise. Yeah, a lot of fun. Oh, let me tell you about who's going to be on next week before I run it. Eric Schlosser, Fast Food Nation. He's a guy that will definitely talk meat with you, man. Mm-hmm. And he's got the lowdown on the meat industry. And also, he's written a book that's geared for kids to help them not be fat and sick.
Good for him. Yeah.
Actor-director Richard Grant from How to Get Ahead in Advertising. He's got a new film coming out. He can talk to us about Ed Begley Jr., who has to at some point be present on any progressive cause.
Wow.
In some form.
Is his electric car going to be here in his electric car?
I hope so. Paul Rykoff from, Veterans for Truth. Is that what it is? Yeah, we've talked to him a lot. Good night, Chief. I'm going to eat the rest of my sandwich now.